With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
This will certainly have an adult theme and might well contain strong scenes of sex or violence, which could be quite graphic. It may also contain some very explicit language, which will frequently mean sexual swear words.
What do you like listening to?
Chart music.
Chart music.
Crazy youngsters, and welcome to the latest episode of Chart Music, the podcast that left it too late to shove its hand right down the back of this sofa of a random episode of Top of the Pops in time for Christmas. I'm your host, Al Needham, and standing by my side today are, well, nobody at the moment. Here I am in my living room, all on my own, just contemplating what the fuck's going off. So, you know, got an episode of Top of the Pops for you. It looks like it's just going to be me. But, oh, hang on a minute. Is that the doorbell? Fucking hell, Taylor Parks. Hello Taylor.
Hello, Merry Christmas. Blimey, it's snowy out there.
Isn't it just? Yes.
Yeah. Oh, there's, have you had the place done up? I don't remember that roaring open fire.
No.
And giant husky dog.
I've just done a song and dance routine with a load of kids, but they've gone now, so thank yeah, God you're here. Good.
Yeah, all right. Well, I hope you don't mind me settling into your enormous leather sofa and
no, not at all,
stuck
mate.
Into this decanter.
No, yeah. Get stuck in, mate. That's what it's there for.
Yeah, just freeloading. It's what Christmas is all about.
Indeed.
So, yeah, I'm just going to stay here until you're sick of me and start dropping polite hints. I wouldn't leave it any later than that out of respect. So, who else is coming round? No, don't tell me. It'll be a surprise.
Taylor, did you have a good Christmas?
I was just trying to think back. Yeah, well, it was, you know, it's surprising how exhausting isolation can be when you're in permanent furlough.
Yeah.
I don't know, this Christmas, it was different.
Yes.
You know, in the sense of being like all the recent Christmases, but more so.
Yes.
I was stuck in my house. I always dreamt of spending Christmas in London at my place instead of having to race around Britain standing up on 100-quid trains.
Yeah.
You know, with all your crushable presents stuffed into the overhead luggage rack 15 feet away from you and just hoping Bill Sykes isn't back at your flat. Cramming the four things that you own with any resale value into a burlap sack, you know, and crack pissing over everything else for a laugh. But yeah, my vision of Christmas at home sort of involved me wearing a big jumper, surrounded by all friends who've all inexplicably decided to come round to my shit flat instead of being at theirs. You know, walking past a Victorian lamppost in the snow and all that.
Yeah.
And, you know, having some sort of adventure with a moral rather than the reality, you know, of getting up when it's already dark and eating scrambled eggs on low-carb toast. Mind you, there's a moral to that too.
Yes. Which is?
I don't want to think about it at the moment. Still, there's always the birth of Jesus to cheer us all up.
Yeah, to contemplate.
Joy to the world.
Yeah,
cheers, love. What a difference you've made. Yeah, I heard something interesting about Jesus the other day. Apparently he was 5'5".
Right.
I got no idea what this is based on or how that was calculated or from what the measurements were taken, but that's what I heard. Yeah, and I think it's pretty good because he didn't let it hold him back, did he?
No.
He went out there and showed the world he didn't just get where he was because of who his dad was. But it's impressive because he must have had that sort of short guy intensity and compact, controlled rage, you know, like Al Pacino or Joe Pesci or Bob Dylan or Jose Mourinho.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you can imagine him getting furious in the temple with the money changers, just turning over all the tables and much bigger blokes sort of step back looking inexplicably worried, like Tom Cruise as Jack Reacher. You know, it's weird. But it's weird. You wouldn't think that God would choose to put his only son so far from heaven. Yeah. On the positive side, though, it does save on wood. Do you mind if I have a brandy?
No, go ahead, mate.
Oh, cheers.
Oh, hey, Taylor, there's somebody at the door. There's somebody at the door. There's somebody at the door. It's Sarah fucking B. Hey up, Sarah. Hello. Come on in.
Hello.
Merry Christmas, dog, or whatever
Hello.
It was. No.
Merry festive, what's it?
Yeah, merry festive perennium.
That's the lad.
Yes. How are we?
Well, I've just got to brush the twinkly frost off my warm fake fur here. Can I hang it up? Is it all right? Can I just
go ahead.
Put a bottle? In fact, it's not full, but you know, it's cold out there. I've had to like fortify myself on the way, you know. But what's mine is yours. What is left in here is well, I want some of it, but also you can have some because that's the kind of guy I am. Oh, it's nice in here.
Good Christmas, dog?
It was quite pleasant, thank you.
Lovely.
We did what we did last year, which was hang out in our flat together and
fuck everyone else.
Eat basically, it's terrible. No, you know, we phoned our folks and stuff, and then we ate a bit too late and everything. But not what is too late.
No, there's no such thing.
It's not a day for worrying about scheduling, really.
No,
you don't have to watch the Queen if you don't want to, because you're grown ups now and you can do what you want.
Yeah,
mostly put on a sort of a festive playlist of not Christmas but Christmassy music,
yeah,
which basically you start with the Cocteau Twins and go from there,
right.
Yeah, stuff that's like stuff that's twinkly, stuff that gives you that little twinkle in your head, you know. So yeah, did that, and I thought, oh, I know, I'll put on one of those. I've got YouTube on the telly, and it's like there's like 7 hours of relaxing fire loop. So it's that slightly weird fake fire, and it has a sort of crackling, you know, the pleasant. And I love the sound of a crackling fire, because who doesn't?
Yeah.
So it was on under the music, and in between the songs, it gets lovely, peaceful crackling noise, you know.
Nice.
But unfortunately, it was sort of half relaxing and half really stressful, because I kept forgetting that it was on, and I'd be sort of loafing about, and then I'd be like, Oh, isn't this nice? Wait, what's burning? No, it's fine. No, it's the thing you put on. Oh, yeah, it is. Oh, isn't that nice? What a fun thing. Yeah, it's lovely. Hang on, what's burning? I can hear it. Oh, no, it's fine. And so that was, you know, stimulating.
Didn't that have ads crashing in every 10 minutes? That would ruin it. Like, just like, have you ever thought of investing in Bitcoin?
Ah!
No, stop it.
No, I really haven't. Can you fuck off? No, so that... Fortunately, it was... Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to be paying for that in other ways, aren't I? For the sort of 3 hours of fake fire that I had on. But it was like, let's make it... Because we weren't feeling very Christmassy. And it's like, God, we have to like find the Christmas in ourselves. And it always, you know, you find it in the end. So it's just like, yeah, get all the fairy lights that you can. Get all the candles. And, you know, that kind of did it. And we had some neighbours on Christmas Eve. One of the neighbours were like, oh, we didn't get crackers and the kids will be sad. And we had four crackers and the two of us. So my bloke ran round two crackers to the neighbours. And then we had the other two. And we got a little chess set in one of them.
A fucking arsehole.
A tiny, weeny one. Like a little kind of... like a plastic one, obviously.
Ooh.
The jokes were not really worth repeating. They weren't like, you need really shit Christmas cracker jokes, and they kind of weren't of that specific quality. And we played the shortest game of charades. It was like, okay, five words, film, book. First word, around the world in 80 days. Yeah, that's it. Let us now continue drinking. So, yeah.
Worse than bad cracker jokes, someone I know has got a cheese advent calendar.
Oh.
Where you get a different bit of cheese every day and you get a joke with it. And they put a picture of one up on Facebook the other day. It says, do you know the most popular cheese in Great Britain? And the answer is British cheese.
Oh, fucking hell.
I think that's actually the worst joke I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
Since
it's like art.
Since the one that was on Teletext Kids Jokes page in 1989 that said, "What did Bross say when he gave his girlfriend a box of chocolates?" Answer, "Chocolate in the box!" Exclamation
what?
Mark.
What?
Yeah, it actually hurts to read it.
Incredible. I do wonder who does these things because, you know, I've done various sort of weird copywriting jobs and it's like, oh, now I know who does that thing because now it's me. But I'm not proud of it. But bloody Poundland were looking for, like, terrible joke writers, so I applied for that. And they probably just used my shit and didn't, you know. What was the joke? I can't even remember what I... Oh, I know. I only gave them half of the joke, hoping that they would, like, get back to me. It's like, you're going to be intrigued by this terrible question, aren't you? I think it was a 50 Shades of Grey joke because, you know, they like sort of saucy shit like that.
It's a bit naughty, isn't it?
Great family fun.
Yeah. Yeah, but they are. They're gross, aren't they? I'm not proud of it. I'm really glad I didn't get that work. I've done enough work in my life where I've gone, I'm going to have to answer for this one day, you know.
Just went round my mum's and ate.
Yeah.
And that was it. Just another Sunday. I prefer New Year's Eve anyway. I think New Year's Eve's a far better ceremony.
Yeah.
Because there's no religious bollocks in it. It's just like, oh, we need a new calendar. Let's get fucked.
It's the festival of the fresh start. And I love that, even if it doesn't. I know that it's bollocks in a lot of ways. And it's not like, oh, you know, people kind of going, let's hope 2021 is better. Yeah, definitely not at first. It's not going to be. It's going to get. But it's a nice, it's a lovely sort of idealistic thing, isn't it? And yeah, it's that you get the countdown, and I defy you not to get, you're not going to sit there going 5, 4, 3, you know, you're going to have a feeling of like, just for a minute, you're going to go, this is a fresh, clean new year and nothing bad has happened in the first minute of it, you know?
Second,
yeah,
yes.
This is going to be our year. That's what I said yes. at the start of 2020 as well.
Mm. Yeah, we do it every time. It is proper, like, Charlie Brown, Lucy with the football shit.
Yes.
But still.
No, because I used to like New Year's Eve when I was a kid. Because, you know, number one, you could stop up late.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you got the pleasure of seeing your mum and dad pissed up when they come back. But you also got to see the Hogmanay show as well, and that was fucking weird.
Mm.
That's the only time you ever saw Scotland on telly, and you just thought, fucking hell, they're all mad up there. I can imagine the pot-crazed Caledonians just with their hands sliding down the face going, oh, fucking hell, this is what they think we are. It'd be like if every TV station in America just showed the England show, where it was just non-stop fucking Morris dancing and cheese rolling and the Wurzels.
It'd be worse than that for Americans. It would be the Canada show.
Yes.
It'd just be like a moose walking around.
Yes.
For like 3 hours.
Yeah. A Christmas moose, though, a festive moose with its antlers all adorned. That would be lovely.
Anyway, yeah, fuck Christmas. I'd glad to see the back of the cunt. I am. You know, we normally do a Christmas one, but I hit the fucking wall a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't get my shit together. So we're going to do some at Christmas there, but we're just going to... I mean, fuck it. Let's hang Christmas out as long as possible. Who gives a toss nowadays?
Not me.
We're going to act like them bellends on your street who still have their Christmas decorations up in February.
Oh, God, there's a thing, isn't there, though, with, like, how long Christmas decorations are up for? It's like... end of January, people forget when it is. It's fine, you understand. When you get into February, it's like, and then by the time, like, it's March, it's like someone is dead in there.
Yeah.
So you should probably call the police.
Yeah, the most depressing thing in the world is where you go past someone's house where they've affixed some sort of decorations to their windows that they obviously couldn't get off.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've got some sort of fake snow spray. Like stickers of snowflakes of that just stuck to the window pane. Like big talon shaped trenches going down.
So anyway, there's no Patreon list and there's no top 10 in this episode, but I want to make it known right from the off that this episode is dedicated to all the pop craze youngsters who have put a jingle in our G-string this year, because fucking hell, if it wasn't for you, I would be sitting under a fucking cash point machine playing the EastEnders theme on a penny whistle.
Yeah, me too.
Fucking hell, I lost all my work this year. Only chart music has sustained me. So if you're one of these people, seriously, thank you so fucking much.
Yeah, really.
You saved my arse.
Yeah, I quite like my arse where it is. And, you know, so thank you. We really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah, me too. It like freed me up to start work on my unauthorised muckraking biography of Tony Blackburn. It's going to be called 4,000 Holes.
So this episode, Pop Craze Youngsters, takes us all the way back to December the 25th, 1983. Oh yes, it's one of them Christmas specials where the winner's circle of that year's charts are brought out for a trot about for a full hour. Sarah, let's start with you. Was the Christmas Top of the Pops an essential part of Christmas Day for you?
Not at this time, because even though I was thinking about this, I think Top of the Pops probably entered my consciousness before the charts did on the radio, you know. But we probably wouldn't. We were at my grandparents', because I used to live with them, and then by this time we had just got our own place, but we'd go back to me and my mum, and then we went back to my grandparents' for Christmas Day for the traditional get the big table out, get the traditional dry turkey and slightly lumpy gravy, and, you know, the sort of soft sprouts. And yeah, so I think we would definitely, we watched the Queen's speech, everything stopped for the Queen, but not for Top of the Pops. I think it was a bit, my grandpa probably would have found something in it, but I think my nana was been slightly troubled by it. So, you know, when the olds would be sort of like a little bit disturbed, like, what is all this, you know, and they weren't even that old, you know, but it's like the way that people used to lean into being old in that way. I think they lent right into it, so, you know.
You can't tell the difference, can you? What, is it a man or a woman?
I'm so confused. I don't like it.
We've touched on 1983 a couple of times, haven't we? And as David pointed out in the last episode when we did late December 1982, 1983's seen as the year that the rot started to set in. But, you know, there are some belting tunes on this Top of the Pops. And I came away from it thinking, you know what, we may have to look at 1983 anew.
Well, it's sort of like the ghost year, isn't it? It's like the Aventys is over and done with, but there's still some dispute and confusion over where the 80s are going. And one of the interesting things about this episode, because it's a compilation, it more or less covers everything. It's got records which really clearly point the way to 84 and 85, for better or for worse. It's got records which point the way towards a different 84 and 85 that never happened.
Yes.
There's records that are still stuck in 1981 and trying to find a way out. And even the first coffins of what would become the late 1980s are here in bits and pieces. And a couple of failed attempts to do something completely different, which just end up on the compost heap. So it's a lot more interesting than you would expect from 1983, isn't it?
Yeah. In the last chart music that we did, Top of the Pops demonstrated that it could fill an entire episode with almost all British acts. I think Bing Crosby was the only American in that episode. Wow. And I do recall the 1982 Top of the Pops, you know, had a couple of American acts in it, obviously, but it was mainly British. But it would have been a more difficult job in this one, wouldn't it? Because if 1982 was the year of the British invasion, 1983 was the year that the Yanks started chucking crates of British bands back into the water. The pushback began here, didn't it?
Yeah, it was weird, actually, because, you know, I always think of 1984 as like my year zero for pop culture and stuff. But all of this was super familiar to me when I watched this episode. And it's like the 2 years are sort of inevitably very closely coupled in my memory. Mm. And trying to sort of peel them apart is quite tricky. But I do think there was a mad vitality in this year, because it is a sort of like, who is going to claim this decade? Who's going to set the tone? Who's going to set what it's about? And it's, you know, there's less of the attempts to align with existing tradition. And there isn't quite yet the sort of futurism that was going to shortly explode. So there's a kind of naive immediacy to a lot of it. There's kind of an attempt to sort of capture like a nowness and a sort of vitality in that kind of slightly sparkling, slightly fizzy kind of superficial way. It seems sort of superficial but frivolous and throwaway, a lot of it, but I think that's kind of slightly literal minded way to take it. It's like that was an attempt to just do something of the moment now. And so for some people, it's like, this is dated really terribly. But for me, it still has that zing about it.
Mm.
I think it was a good moment to be coming into sort of cultural consciousness, to be sort of waking up into the world in that way. Although it has clearly, it's also scarred me for life. It's like, this is the music that formed my neural pathways. And I'm still whizzing around that like a sort of little slightly knackered scale X trick.
Let's get stuck in.
Yay.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, I'm Justin.
And I'm Lucy.
And together we are the hosts of Plenty Questions.
It's a very straightforward general knowledge quiz.
We ask you 20 questions, one after the other, 5 second gap in between, and you shout the answers out.
And then you tweet us to let us know how you've got on.
See if you can get 20 out of 20. No one has so far, but that's because we haven't started doing it yet.
But we will. And there's also going to be some fiendish brain teasers, so join us for Plenty Questions.
The news. An IRA bomb has gone off in a rubbish bin in Oxford Street, but it was Christmas Day, so no one was about. Pope John Paul II has nipped over to Rabibbia Prison in Rome for a cup of tea and a chit-chat with Mehmet Ali Agca, who shot him 4 times 18 months ago. The two spoke in private, so there is no record of the conversation, but it's safe to assume there was at least £40 a snout and a blank passport for Inky Stevens under that cassock. Loads of mad Americans have been punching each other in the face in various toy shops in a doomed attempt to get a Cabbage Patch Kid for their spawn. A family of 10 have been allowed to emigrate to the Falkland Islands next month, boosting their population gain since the war by nearly 30%. They intend to run a croft and open a Vietnamese restaurant. Two Oxford dons have announced that they estimate that baby Jesus was actually born on Friday the 3rd of April, AD 33. Yuri Andropov fails to turn up for a Communist Party meeting, sparking more rumours that he's on his way out, and he dies 5 weeks later. Oh, this close to being in the Two Tribes video. Violet Carson, who played Ina Sharples in Coronation Street for 20 years, has died in Blackpool at the age of 85. A Fortnum & Mason hamper worth £1,000 has been sent to the Greenham Common Peace Camp by Linda McCartney. Level 42 have offered to play a free gig in Luxembourg as an apology for England fans who picked it up and threw it through a pub window last month. But the big news is Santa's bin. What did he get you?
I think I got a Viewmaster.
Wow.
It's such a... Can you imagine that now? It was just a little set of like red non-binoculars and you put them up to your eyes and you put it on and there were like slides that you could look at of things.
What was in it? I bet it was Disney.
Cannot remember anything at all about it. I just remember that, you know, and I'm sure if I saw one of those images now, I'd just do the hyper jump back to that time, but I can't remember. I just remember the sort of the particular quality of the light in it, and that's it. But I think I also got a Hasbro glowworm, which I loved. Ooh. And it's just a little sort of thing, and it's in a little sleeping bag, and if you shine a light on it and then you look at it under the cover, it like glows and it has a lovely sleepy smiley face, and it was one of my favorite things. I actually had, in a fit of nostalgia earlier this year, I went and got one off eBay. And it doesn't glow very well, but it tries.
That's all that matters.
That's all that, you know, it's like at least you tried. An effort was made, you know. But yeah, I think I also got a Spirograph set.
Ooh.
Also don't know what happened to that. And I could go for a bit of Spirograph now. It's like a really soothing thing. And it's like, order in a chaotic universe.
Mm.
You put your pen in the thing there, and then you go, you do whatever you want. You go wee with your pen all over the paper, and yet what comes out is a perfect kind of orbital pattern. And, you know, yeah.
You've essentially just designed a rave flyer circa 1991.
Yeah, basically.
I think I got the Viewmaster of the opening of Misty Beethoven.
On the cover of the NME, a silhouette of Santa playing the saxophone. On the cover of Smash Hits, Howard Jones raising a glass as someone out of shop pours champagne into it. Probably vegan champagne, no doubt. On the cover of the Radio Times is an Art Deco Christmas tree with loads of 12 Days of Christmas semiology. On the cover of the TV Times, an appalling illustration of Prince Charles doing up the Christmas tree, Prince William grabbing a party hat, and Lady Di leaning on a puff that's right up against a screen of what looks like a Ferguson Colour Star television. Fucking hell, that's insane, isn't it?
It's a disturbing image, it really is. They're all kind of dead-eyed and sort of, it's really weird.
Head's bigger than the body.
The Radio Times one, though, is lovely. And the Radio Times now really phones it in. They just have the same kind of... They have the same guy, like, just slightly redo a very sort of pastely, fluffy Father Christmas with or without reindeer. And, you know, why try harder?
Yeah. The number one LP in the country at the moment is Now That's What I Call Music. The original one, No Parlay by Paul Young, is at number two. Over in America, the number one single is Say, Say, Say by Paul McCartney and Michael Jackson. And the number one LP, of course, is Thriller by Michael Jackson. It's 22nd non-concurrent week at number one. So, me dears, what were we doing on Christmas Day of 1983?
This was the second last proper Christmas of my childhood, right? Because I was 11 and everyone's last 100% Christmas is when they're 12. Do you know what I mean? Like, after that, it can still be great, but it's a holiday. Whereas before that, it's a tear in the fabric of reality. And in 1983, I was still feeling that eerie glow. You know, I mean, obviously, I was too old to believe in anything. But you still got that sense of everything being different, you know, and better and sharper and that glorious loss of all sense of what day it is and the wonderful sprawl of the festive perineum. Lying around eating a chocolate orange at 11 o'clock in the morning, you know.
God.
Watching a Czechoslovakian animation about a mouse that saved a snowman's life. This might have been the year I got a beanbag. Actually, no, it wasn't. I would have been earlier, but I definitely remember sitting in the beanbag, eating toasted cheese sandwiches and watching skiing with no understanding of the sport, like, you know, France Clamour or some cunt in the downhill from Lauberhorn, you know, which for some reason I remember as the perfect moment of peace and contentment, just grooving on the alpine ambience, you know, that sort of ding-a-ling-a-ling. Basically, what I'm saying, I had an existential fever and the only prescription was more cowbell.
I was five at this time. I was
a magical
time,
then.
Five and two-thirds. Yeah, really. It was properly good. Me and my mum had our own house by now and I'd been at school for like a year already and was already pretty tired of it, I think. We had our own house and it was like a mile away from my grandparents where I had lived before. So we went back there for Christmas dinner. I definitely remember it being very, very warm from the gas fire and very, very bright from the overhead. The big light would be on, like, all through into the evening. And I am now, like, I don't know how I stuck it because now I'm absolutely, like, very, very low light at all times, please. And
I hate it when the big light's on.
Yeah, fuck the big light.
Yeah.
Fuck the big light. The big light is for when you have dropped something of value and you need to fight.
Exactly.
Although,
and no other time.
You have iPhone torches for that, though. So a big light is just for doing the hoovering if there's not, you know, it's a practical thing. And the rest of the time it needs to butt out, especially on Christmas. Christmas is a time for low light and fucking twinkling. But yeah, it was still nice. But that's my, if I think of that time, that's, I'm like stiflingly warm no air at all. But it's somehow still been quite pleasant. So at home we had guinea pigs, which I guess we had to we couldn't leave them for very long because the guinea pigs had shagged, and so there were more guinea pigs.
Oh.
And they were born on Christmas Eve, I think. So we had two called Holly and Ivy because they were festive guinea pigs. It's like along with Raymond Briggs, the snowman. These are the things that teach you about life and death, you know, when you're a child. Because the snowman was actually, it was 1982 that it was made. And it's basically, it's become a Christmas tradition where it's on every year, either Christmas Eve or Christmas Day.
Just like on the buses films.
It's like, exactly. But except with more death in it. It's like everything and everyone you know and love will leave you. Okay, cool. That's a good message. Yeah, great. But it didn't seem to be in the listings this year. Maybe I missed it. But so I guess we didn't watch The Snowman. But that was like it's like early trauma. Oh, yeah. And we had very fancy crackers, which had Wade Whimsies in them. Do you know what this Wade is like?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. And the crackers had those in, like the little tiny pot animals, and you could collect them. There were like hundreds of them. And I amassed a huge collection, not just from the first from the crackers. I think that was the start of my collection. And then later on, we would go to sort of, you know, junk shops and antique fairs and whatever the hell. And you'd find them for like, you know, 10p or 20p or whatever. So I had loads of them. And eventually I've sold most of them.
Sarah's Ark.
That was it. And yeah, though most of them have gone now, but you know, because people still collect them now, and they were, you know, some of them sold for like 10 quid each. So that was like my little nest egg. I didn't even realise it. And now I have spent it all on frivolities and staying Fripperous. Alive.
Yes. I'm 15 at the time, so it's the money and clothes period for me.
Yeah.
And the only thing I can remember from it was I got a jumper from Marks and Spencer's with massively long diamonds down the front. This is the casual era, but I couldn't afford any of that shit, and I wasn't going to nick it. So I had to make do with this. And I teamed that up at school with a black shirt and my black and red Op-Art cravat and some white trousers, which I got for Christmas as well. And I remember in January of 1984, I'm walking along the corridor, and there's this one girl. It was always fucking horrible to me. And she's just staring at me aghast. And eventually she says, "Fucking hell, Needham, what are you into?" And I just looked at her and just said, "Oh, I'm into jazz now," just to confuse her further. But I do remember it being a fucking mint Christmas, because people always go on about the magic of a child's Christmas, and they never go on about how good it is when you're a teenager, because you can still dip into the worlds of childhood and adulthood. You know, you can read an annual still, and you can drink booze as well.
Mm, that's the sweet spot, isn't it?
But it's perfect. I mean, why didn't fucking Dylan Thomas write a follow-up called A Teenager's Christmas in Wales? it would probably end with, "So much wanking. So much wanking." As a teenager, your only obligation over Christmas is just to be in a chair for Christmas dinner.
Yeah.
And after that, everyone wants you to get the fuck out of the way. Mm. And then the day after Boxing Day, your parents fuck off back to work and you've got the whole house to yourself. So it's just perfect. And, you know, the telly was fucking skill at the time. So all you got to do is nip downstairs, load up on crisps and sausage roll, get a handful of Quality Street and fuck off back to your nest again.
Mm.
Fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
Now you're a grown up, you've just got to be there all the time. There's no time that you can actually just go off and just be on your own. Fuck being a grown up at Christmas, it's shit. So while we're waiting to see if any more guests turn up, why don't we leave through the crates and pull out the Melody Maker from this week? Shall we have a leaf through and talk about the old times?
Yeah, all right.
Good out. So I've got Melody Maker from December the 24th, 1983. My Christmas present to myself.
Ooh.
On the cover, Tracy Ullman, all santered up.
Yeah, a front cover which fairly screams another cover fell through.
Yes.
I think that happened to us about 95 or 96 at Melody Maker. We've been promised something, you know, unusual and exciting, like Oasis, and got fucked over and had to drag the designers out of the pub or the same cubicle in the pub toilets, more like, and to create some kind of photo collage or something. Christmas message, you know, in the probably in the light and inauthentically laddish style of the day, like, you know, Merry Christmas, fella, or something. Have a pint of beer.
Top Christmas.
Drink some beer. It's F asterisk 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 in apostrophe Christmas.
Oh, it's probably God, I'm saying. Just remembering the final ever Melody Maker was had Fred Durst in a fucking Santa hat. The least festive man. Just giving it that weird stare that he did. The ghost of Christmas shit.
In the news, Pete Townsend has announced that The Who will never work together again due to his inability to compose any new material that the rest of the band want to record. I will not be making any more records with The Who, the statement read, and I can now say that I will not perform live again anywhere in the world with The Who. Tickets for The Who's 2021 tour of the UK and Ireland are now available on the internet. The Clash have announced their latest tour of the UK, even though they currently consist of Joe Strummer and Paul Simonon. Meanwhile, the recently sacked Mick Jones has been putting it about that he had no idea he was about to be knobbed off and insisted that he hadn't drifted away from the original Clash philosophy as stated by Strummer. And nothing else happened at all because it's Christmas. Inside the paper, well, Steve Sutherland finds himself in business class from Amsterdam to Heathrow with the It Girl of 1983, Tracy Ullman. They open the conversation with a discussion on whether Len Fairclough did something in that swimming pool. Ullman thinks not.
Wow.
And when asked about her hopes for 1984, she asks for ITV to repeat Please Sir and On the Buses. Fucking hell, she must have been happy as a pig in shit over the Christmas period. Good old Forces TV. And ITV3. According to her, the highlight of 1983 was having a phone chat with Margaret Wilkins, the matriarch of the 1974 documentary series The Family, which was repeated this year. When asked about her music career, she confesses her fears of being put in the same bracket as Bucks Fizz and the Doolies, and whenever she's on Top of the Pops, she's been advised by the crew to stick to the acting. She's also had enough of creepy male journalists who keep trying to cop off with her.
But how are we meant to reproduce? It's funny, though, that she mentioned that. He must have been leaning in a bit or something. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, like, as a bloke, if you ever find yourself talking to a woman that you don't know, like, completely innocently, like, maybe if you're both at the scene of a hang gliding accident or something, and you're just having a conversation with her as a stranger, and after about 90 seconds, she'll just find a way to mention her boyfriend. And I absolutely understand why that happens, but I never quite know what to say. Yeah. It's like, well, you know, fucking hell. Yeah, that's Tracy Ullman in that mode, yeah. Mm.
Ian Pye nips down to heaven to see a 15-minute PA by a new band from Liverpool. Frankie goes to Hollywood and isn't sure if they're pretending to have oral sex on stage or are actually doing it. During the interview the next day, Ollie Johnson has a cob on that the video for their debut single Relax has already been banned, moans that his solo career after Big in Japan was a non-starter because the label was obsessed with Pete Wiley, and assures us that they're not going to be the new Village People because it's the 80s, they'd all have to be on the dole, wouldn't they? He signs off by telling the readers, do anything you want. Licking boots and eating shit is normal. Remember that.
Remember, like, as if you'd be going like, oh yeah, I forgot. It's normal, isn't it?
Yes.
If he likes licking boots and eating shit, he should hang out with people who live on Holloway Road. Then he could save time by combining the two.
Paul Strange finds himself outside Stiff Records HQ in Camden on a Sunday morning, about to embark on a coach trip to Amsterdam with King Kurt fans to see them play at the Melkweg. After having to endure the stench of puked up snake bite, he discovers that the band have already caused £600 worth of damage in the hotel. And halfway through the gig, he gets dragged up on stage, stripped to his pants, and is force fed a bucket of snake bite through a funnel. The gig is cut short when the locals get sick of having flower bombs lobbed at them and start letting off fire extinguishers in return.
That's quite festive though, isn't it?
Nick Cave gives Steve Sutherland one of his first interviews after going solo and says that reading a recent gig review of Susie and the Banshees in Melody Maker, which praised them for still carrying on, made him feel that he was completely right to split up the birthday party. He talks about feeling that people were only turning up to the band's last few gigs in the hope that they would disintegrate on stage, and then gets into a row with Sutherland over having a swastika on the Mutiny EP, claiming it was there because it's a dead powerful symbol, and in any case, he used to have a Jewish girlfriend, so there. He didn't give the real reason, that it sort of looks like an N when you rotate it a bit. Because he used a crucifix for a T, you see.
Yes.
And Dessa Fox ruminates on the future of pop television and points out that as youth unemployment is here to stay and the pop-crazed youngsters have more time on their hands than ever before, there's going to be more of it. She lauds the new Channel 4 outputs such as The Switch and The Tube and claims that A Midsummer Night's Tube was the television event of the year. As for Top of the Pops, she asks why they're still employing Jonathan King, and out of the current crop of presenters, only Peter Powell, Kid Jensen and John Peel should be kept on.
It's funny, isn't it, the way they're like, oh, well, there's going to be more youth unemployment, so there's going to be more pop TV to cater to it. It's like people in the early 80s thought they were having a fucking hard time. It's like in the unemployment apocalypse to come next year, you'd probably get your fucking benefits stopped if you caught watching TV.
Single reviews. Well, there aren't any. But the Melody Maker number one single of 1983 is Keep Feeling Fascination by the Human League, and the number one LP is Touch by the Eurythmics. In the LP review section, well, the main review is given over to Japanese Whispers, The Cure singles November 1982, November 1983, and Adam Sweetin writes about it as if it's the final kiss-off from a soon-to-be-defunct band. He lavishes praise upon Love Cats, claiming this is what the band could have been, while the remaining seven tracks demonstrate where and how often they went wrong. With musicians currently being auditioned for touring purposes, perhaps a new Cure is about to spring out and surprise everybody. But don't get rid of the Valium yet. Sweetin also froths at the mouth at the re-release of Otis Blue. Not a milestone in soul music, but a milestone, period.
He means full stop.
However, it's a coat down from Carole Clark for The Bop Won't Stop, the new release by Shakin' Stevens. This is rock and roll with its face so scrubbed clean you can't even recognise it. One teaspoonful of dirt to 10 gallons of water. Retaining all the threat of a toothless teddy bear, Stevens has allowed himself to become the plaything of kiddies and idiotic adults alike. The Cabbage Patch Kid of the 80s.
Good old Carol.
Clark is more charitable towards the amazing Kamikaze Syndrome, the 11th studio album by Slade. No matter what the deifications of fate, no matter what the odds against survival, no matter how many kickings have to be endured, Slade will never abandon the battle while there's spirit enough left to fight it. Number two at the minute, Slade, don't forget.
Mm.
The Amazing Kamikaze Syndrome features the song Cocky Rock Boys Rule OK. Bang up to date. In the gig guide, David could have seen madness at the Lyceum, Toya at the Marquee, Elvis Costello and Prefab Sprout at Hammersmith Odeon, and Duran Duran at Wembley Arena, but probably didn't. Taylor could have seen Judas Priest at the Birmingham Odeon, The Police at the NEC, Robert Plant at the Odeon, or the Meteors at the Tin Can Club. Neil could have seen Vardis at the General Wolf, or King at the General Wolf. Sarah could have seen The Damned at Leeds Queen's Hall and fuck all else. Al could have seen Gary Glitter at the Palais, Marillion at Rock City, or nipped over to Leicester to see King Kurt at the Belfry. And Simon could have seen Hot Chocolate at Cardiff St David's Hall or Fairport Convention at the same venue. In the letters page, Andy of Guildford writes to complain about a recent singles review page written by Lyndon Barber. He may feel his style is trendy, but it's bloody useless to the record-buying public looking for an informative guide to what's available in the shops. It's look at me, I'm hip morons like Barber that drag your paper down.
Yeah. Oh,
you're lot always trying to be cool, aren't you?
Yeah, it's just arrogant. The only non-arrogant thing to do is to assume that your subjective view is objective truth and inform the readers.
Why don't you give them the registration number for all the singles? That's what the readership wants.
Yeah.
Lee Shankster of Coventry takes massive offence at Melody Maker's review of an Icicle Works gig at the General Wolf. Not for what was said about the band, but the venue. I agree that Coventry is a shithole for live bands, but the Wolf is an exception. It has a very good atmosphere and doesn't have turkeys that think they're hard by staring at you.
Yeah, well, turkeys that think they're hard is not what anyone needs at Christmas time, is it?
No. A usually placid female from Preston Pans unleashes the fury upon Puffy Boy from Paisley for slagging off David Bowie in a previous instalment of Backlash. Who the hell do you think you are, spouting forth from the cultural echelons of cultural Paisley? Obviously someone with two bob in your faded denims who can't afford a baggy suit. And Perry of No Address is incandescent with rage at Quiet Riot having a massive hit in America with Come On Feel the Noise. Slade are a great band who made a fairly concentrated effort to break America before the advent of MTV. Now we're forced to put up with these Slade clones mimicking the masters. Let's see some justice for a change. Yeah.
The important issues there.
Well, as we know, in that chart music the week before this, Lord Stephen Regal dragged the lead singer of Quiet Riot over a DJ desk for being catty about Slade. And his wig came off. So, yes, there's your justice, Perry. 64 pages, 80 pennies. I never knew there was so much in it. Did you enjoy the Christmas music papers?
Yeah.
As a reader, not so much as a writer, I'm guessing.
Well, yeah, only as a reader. A writer, it was just like, you know, you've got 6 seconds. We need 6,000 words, you know.
Yeah. So what else was on telly today? Well, BBC One commences at 8:35 with The Christmas Raccoons, a musical cartoon narrated by Rich Little, with the raccoons played by Rita Coolidge and Rupert Holmes. Do you like pina colada and eating scraps from a bin? Then it's Carols from Newby Hall in Clifton, Away in a Manger, where kids from around the country prattle on about the Nativity, followed by a Christmas morning family service from the Mint Methodist Church in Exeter, next door to the Skill Synagogue. After the weather with Michael Fish, it's The Little Convict, a cartoon about how Australia was populated by crims, starring Rolf Harris. That's followed by Ziggy's Gift, where the American comic strip character that means nothing to British people takes a job as a street Santa. After a Bugs Bunny cartoon, it's The Glitter Ball, the 1977 Children's Film Foundation picture, which is essentially E.T. 5 years before the event, but with a massive ball bearing instead. BBC Two has stayed in bed reading annuals and ripping through a selection box until 2 p.m, where they give us a repeat of Nobody Minded the Rain, the story of the preparation and execution of the Queen's coronation 30 years ago.
Ugh, Nobody Minded the Rain. Yeah, they should have called it We All Got Pissed On. She was in a carriage made out of gold in a £600 billion hat.
ITV kicks off at 7 a.m. with Rub-A-Dub Tubbs Christmas Special, with special guests Michelle Detriste, Bonnie Langford and Edward Woodward. What's the fucking Equalizer doing on that?
he had a little side career as a family variety. Have you never seen the Edward Woodward Hour?
No.
It's worth a look. It's his variety show where he does a bit of singing, introduces a few acts.
Then he cleans the street.
Yeah, he's a bit more convincing cracking bones than cracking jokes, I have to say.
After that, it's Christmas with TVAM, where Anne Diamond, Nick Owen, Richard Keys, Wincy Willis and Mad Lizzie pretend to have a party, while Chris Tarrant bothers the residents of a children's hospital and Cardinal Basil Hume pitches up with a thought for Christmas.
I thought you were going to say Cardinal Basil Brush. I'm going mad.
After Roland's Winter Wonderland, where the Johnny-eared rodent and his mates piss about in a ski hut, it's the night the animals talked. The Sammy Kahn parable about the nativity from the donkey's point of view. Then it's a 5-minute preview of ITV's next big kids show, The Fraggles Are Coming.
Taylor!
You're quite excited about that, weren't you, Taylor?
No, I was just excited recently to hear they've found all the missing episodes of Fraggle Rock.
Oh, yes,
yeah, so happy about that.
Of course, for celebration.
The other thing,
that and the vaccine.
No, the other thing is that's even better than that is that the missing scene from the Muppet Christmas Carol that was taken out because they thought it was either too sad for children
because of nudity.
God, you people are, honestly, you people are terrible. No, the missing scene, which is, they didn't have the original tape of it because they chucked it because they figured it was either too sad or too boring for children because it's Scrooge's girlfriend sings a song to him, basically dumping him because he's awful and he's got all his priorities wrong.
What was she going out with him for in the first place then?
I think she would have figured it out. Well, she couldn't, you can't always tell with people, can you? And then you get all invested and then it turns out they're a legendary miser. But yeah, so it's that, and it lasts. It's like a 10-minute scene or something, and they took it out. But the thing is, it has to be in there because then there's a reprise at the end. The sort of really heartbreaking and heartlifting song at the end. It's the same song but with different lyrics.
Oh.
The song is called "When Love Is Gone" or "The Love Is Gone," and then at the end, it's "The Love We Found."
Oh,
bless.
The love we found, we keep it with us, so we're never quite alone. And you need it. And children don't mind sad stuff. I always lapped up the sad stuff. Anyway, they found that. They found the original tape. They're going to restore it for a new edition. And happy fucking days. The, you know, God is in his heaven, etc. Give us the vaccine.
After that, it's Messengers to Earth. Another nativity parable, but this time set in space or summer, I don't know. Then it's even more Christmas morning worship. How much do you need to be fucking worshipped, baby Jesus?
Well, it's God, isn't it?
God's sake.
These gods are a bit like Donald Trump, you know what I mean? You have to just keep telling him how great he is or he'll fucking kill you.
Yeah. Then it's the magic planet, where an astronaut lands on a planet, falls in love with its queen, and then rescues her from a kidnap attempt. And it's all on ice. After that, it's the capture of Grizzly Adams, the film version of the Beardy Loner TV show. And they've just started the Royal Year, where we get to see all the countries that the royal family have ponced about in off our taxes. Channel 4 starts at 10:30 with a Christmas oratorio from Vienna that goes on for 2¾ hours and then bungs on The Gang's All Here, the 1943 Busby Barclay, Alice Faye and Carmen Miranda musical, which was banned in Brazil due to a 60-woman chorus line being very suggestive while they waved about some massive bananas. Yeah, Christmas morning telly's not that, is it, this year?
Apparently not, no.
Yeah, well, they're just assuming no one's watching at that time of day, isn't it?
Yeah.
Telly is for the afternoon, really. It's when you're sitting there and you can't move and you just have to sit there and attempt to digest what you've so foolishly crammed into your face. And, yeah, just put whatever the fuck on the telly.
Yeah, you just look at this and it's like, look, let's get the religious shit out of the way as soon as possible because the main event's about to happen, which is the Christmas Top of the Pops. And I do believe we shall attend to that in the next episode. So, for now, you know, go off and get yourself some nibbles and I'll talk to you soon. But thank you very much, Taylor Parks.
All right.
See you soon, Sarah.
See you in a bit.
My name's Al Needham. Stay pop crazed, why don't you? We'll be right back.
Chart music.
All of television history is contained within the Box of Delights.
It was happening in front of us.
Incredible.
In our living rooms. It was amazing.
Guests pick their favourite television moment.
And tell us why they love it.
And is this the episode where Daisy's just been for the interview at the Woman's Magazine?
Flaps.
That's it, Flaps.
Yeah.
Named one of Radio Times' best podcasts of the year.
I don't understand people who don't see the joy in drawing the curtains, a mug of hot chocolate and something nice on TV. Like, what could be nicer than that?
Than having a snuggle.
Exactly.
Nostalgia in bite-sized chunks.
Box of Delights
from Great Big Owl.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.